Hello and welcome to the India Dunn and Company podcast. In today's episode, I get to have a long-awaited conversation with my friend Brenda Amaral, calling in all the way from Rainham, Massachusetts. She is a salon owner, ABCH certified hair colorist, inner coiffure member. She is out there busting it, man. She is traveling all over the place, educating and inspiring hairdressers and giving back what she's cultivated over the many years that she has spent behind the chair, on the stage, and in the salon. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the India Dunn and Company podcast, and I get to have a conversation today with my friend Brenda. Hello.
Hi, my friend. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for asking me.
You're here. I'm so
excited.
We made it. In all fairness and honesty of you know.
Transparency.
Transparency. Let's tell the listeners. We recorded a podcast a long time ago and it didn't work. And we've been trying to get back in each other's lives for this time and space together for a little while. And in between now and then, we've had some wonderful adventures together too.
We really have. It was so long ago that we did the other one. So
it feels like a long time.
Yeah. I'm glad to be back. Glad to be in your space. Any chance, you know, any opportunity, I'm happy to be in your space.
I really appreciate that. You have been such an incredible cheerleader for me, and I am so grateful. So tell the listeners who you are, where you are, and how you do what you do.
Okay. So let's see. So who I am. I am Brenda Amaral. I am a salon owner in Massachusetts, just south of Boston. I am vice president of education for a distributor here in the Northeast called Coastline Enterprise. Salon owner, mother, wife, mm-hmm. friend. I'm trying to think of the other things. I mean, maybe they'll come along, but my mind went blank. I've been in the business for about 25 years, and I just have a love and a passion for it. So I'm so honored and lucky that the trajectory of my career has put me with really great people mm-hmm. that have helped me get everywhere that I wanted to go, because I love the education part of the career and also still being behind the chair. I love it. So I feel like the education makes that better. And then the real life application being behind the chair makes the education better.
Well, I have had the privilege of seeing you speak quite a few times, teach and speak in front of large groups of hairdressers, and how you move them, inspire them, and give them permission to laugh and enjoy themselves as well. And I'm just curious, like, what, once you started doing hair, what drew you into knowing that you wanted to do further education?
Okay, that's a really great question. Thank you for asking that. The fact that I started as a hair cutter, you know, with no license and no business cutting anybody's hair, you know, still while I was in high school, and then when I was in college, but I didn't know anything about hair color. So the fact that, I forgot the board certified stuff. So here this comes. I had no idea about hair color and I was scared to death of it. So the first salon that I worked in, I made my friend and owner Robin basically formulate everything for me because I just didn't get it. And then I had moved on from that salon to my next salon home where I was for a really long time. And I took a hair color class that I finally got it. I was like, no way. So I took every color class I could get my hands on, and then they all kind of had about the same kind of thread throughout them, but they would, you know, then they'd lose me when they started talking about their, you know, seven stroke whatever, or their 7 point this, or their 7R whatever. I mean, I had basic understanding, but, you know, if I didn't use that line, I was like kind of lost. So I went back to that first company that the light bulb went off, and I ended up auditioning to be an educator for them. Which again, even with that little education, I had no business doing that in the first place. So just because I just didn't have enough experience under my belt when I started. But, I just started doing education for them. And then I worked at a different distributor here in the Northeast. And, I just kind of got burnt out from that. I didn't realize it was manufacturer education that I was burnt out from.
Okay.
So I had gone through my, like, this was now like the fourth director of education. I get the phone call. It's Lisa Kelly, the new director of education. She says, I'm bringing all the teams together. So she brings everybody together. We get in this room. Because of course, all distributors have different teams.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in the front with my team and we're all dressed in black and my arms are like rocking back and forth. Like, what's this broad about to tell me? Right. And then she opens her mouth and kind of blows my mind because she's talking about everything kind of universally and generically. So Lisa was an educator for a, color line prior to that, but that color line, had talked about things universally and generically. And Lisa was also, she was a board certified hair colorist. So that's where I first heard about that, you could study and take a test and become an American board certified hair colorist. So I knew I definitely wanted to do that. And then, so from there, just learned more about color and everything more generically. I felt like a freedom that I hadn't had before. And because I wasn't really afraid of switching lines or switching anything, because the freedom that came with understanding color universally and generically was unbelievable.
No joke.
So yeah. So Lisa really turned that light on for me. And like I said, introduced me to the board. And then from that distributor, she and I, and basically the whole education team there, followed her to a manufacturing plant here again in New England, where Lisa and I had designed a class. It was a 6-day class.
Wow.
all about hair, the chemistry of hair and hair color. So 6 days is too damn long for any class. So we figured that out.
Figured that one out quick.
Yeah. So we made some tweaks and adjustments and came up with a 4-day class that, 18 years later, she and I are still, and now we've got a whole national team. We teach this class nationally, and it's just an awesome opportunity to connect with our peers. I feel like it's penance for, those first few years, because I didn't realize that I was a glorified salesperson.
Right.
Because I loved my line so much, like if you slip my wrist, it came flying right out of it. So I was like, yeah, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that and just not being afraid to speak in public. I mean, I always get a little nervous, but just, being... one thing just always kind of led to the next, to the next, to the next. I mean, because now, I work for a distributor that Lisa owns. So she's part owner of Coastline. Mm-hmm. So it's just, the building and growing has just continued. It's been hard and a long road because, when you don't have the big flashy names and you don't have, those kind of dollars at your disposal, it takes a lot longer to get there.
Totally.
So... I hope I answered your question, but yeah, that's kind of how.
That's great segue into all of it. And then when you felt like you really kind of touched on something and you were inspiring people to have the same freedom that you were having, was that like the inspiration, the light bulb going off for people? Did that just continue to fuel your journey into education, or what kept you kind of moving?
Absolutely. And I still get jacked up when I see somebody get it that just didn't, or they were scared, or, it's usually the ones in the class that are mad because they're afraid.
Right.
And you just can tell they are ripping mad and they're listening. They're like, oh, not my line, not my whatever. And then, the end for them to be like, wow. I'm like, yeah, man, you can use anything. So that inspires me. I mean, our team inspires me, just the growth that we've had is super inspiring. Yeah. I mean, like Lisa and I used to teach this class together, and now like she and I barely, I mean, talk to each other because we're always somewhere else doing something else, working with the team. She's in an airplane every weekend of her life. And wow. Just so that inspires me, the team. It's just getting to stand up in front of people and knowing that I'm actually helping them, mm-hmm. that if they hear one thing that saves them a little bit of money, mm. and the fact that they can have more fun,
right,
using more what freedom. They're using.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, I don't care what you use. I'm just going to teach you how to use it better and save some money and have some fun while you're doing it. I mean, this isn't brain surgery, but there's a whole lot of chemistry involved. And totally. We forget that sometimes when we want to be super artistic. It's like, no, you can really hurt people with these chemicals that we're using. So we need to do it smarter and better. And then confidence comes with that.
Right, right. Knowledge is power.
Yeah. And we tell all of our students when they're done, we're like, you use your power for good and not evil. Because, you know, totally. I never want to be in a room where somebody's talking to somebody else like they're a moron just because they don't know. Like, you only know what you know.
Yeah.
And I only knew what I knew. And, you know, to be fortunate enough to have people share things with me and be able to understand it and then break it down to how we can share it with other people. I mean, that's just, you know, that's the sauce. That's what it's all about.
Magic stuff. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you're not on a platform or in a classroom, when you're in the salon, how is it that you've created your salon culture and how do you bring people in?
That's a really great question. You know, when I bought the salon, because it was never my mission or vision to own a salon, like that was just not my thing.
Oh, wow.
I had no ambition of that at all. It was just an opportunity. I was booth renting at the time in this salon, and the owner thought she wanted to move to Chicago. So she wanted to sell it to someone she knew. And I thought, oh my God, I can't live with the regret if I don't try.
Right, right.
So I did it, sometimes begrudgingly. And now, you know, with a little time under my belt, I saw, you know, how much stress and I was kind of pissed about at myself that I made the decision, because I was like, oh, I don't really know if I want to do this. And I didn't really know how to do it. And even though I had all kinds of access to all kinds of people, I didn't know what questions to ask who, when.
Wow. Yeah.
And again, that, you know, it's all hindsight's 2020.
Totally.
So, but I knew what I didn't want. I knew I didn't want to be in a space where people felt judged and where people felt uncomfortable,
right.
Where people felt like it was clicky. I didn't want there to be like a back room where somebody was back there and it, well, I don't like this and I don't like her and I don't like him and I don't like, so I just don't have any of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just, we have total transparency there, and you know, that hasn't worked for a lot of people. We've gone through a lot of people. We don't have a lot of the ones that we started with, and that's okay. Yeah. You know, some just decided on another path. I mean, and were great people and are great people. And then other people just didn't fit.
Right.
And so when I'm interviewing now, I mean, the process that we go through now is I work with a vocational school here.
Oh, right.
In Massachusetts. So Bristol Plymouth Vocational Tech. Thanks, guys, for your support. I've got such a great relationship with the teachers there that, you know, I go in, I do some education for the kids. And then that when they have co-op and kids that are ready to come out on co-op, then I'll have some kids come and interview. And then we've gotten really lucky and had some great kids come and that stuck. And so that's the process. You know, cool. I start them out as, you know, you work in the co-op, and then some of them go on to become part of the actual salon family after the school year is over. And then some of them, when it's done, it's done. Because, you know, some of those kids are going on to college. Like, that's not what they're, you know, a salon life is not what they're looking to do full time.
Interesting.
But I like to try to start fresh with somebody and kind of teach them our way of doing things. than to try to deprogram somebody that's already been working for a while.
Totally.
And that's no dig against people that are working for a while. But that's just kind of how we do things, because then I feel like it's a more natural flow.
Totally.
For us.
And Brenna, just for us people, you know, in different parts of the country that don't do, what is this, what are you talking about when you say co-op? What does that mean?
Okay, so thank you for asking for me for clarity. So a co-op is a vocational school where the kids actually, they do 1 week of academics and then they do 1 week of hands-on practical. So they go out, okay, and they find a job. It's a paid position.
Wow.
So they go out and they work and they get paid for the hours that they would have been in school. So then that counts towards their hours for whatever program that they're working through.
Okay.
So here in Massachusetts, you need 1,000 hours.
Okay.
So the kids at the end of the school week, I mean, we fill out a form, we fill out the hours that they were actually there. So then that way that can apply to their schooling, but they have to get, it's usually, I can't get kids until they're seniors.
Okay.
They need enough hours in order to come out and be helping.
Okay. So, that's really interesting. I like that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I wish we had that on the West Coast. I think that would be really beneficial for people.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. I think it's a great opportunity for kids that maybe, you know, they weren't maybe planning on going to college, and then they get out and they work in an environment and they're like, maybe this isn't for me.
Right?
Maybe
exactly.
Maybe I have to go figure out a different trade.
Exactly.
Or this business just isn't the right fit for me.
Totally.
And I mean, I'm super transparent with the kids. I explain, you know, how this industry typically works and that I like to do things different than that. And that we just keep open lines of communication, super transparent. So there's never any surprises for anybody. And,
yeah, that's,
you know,
awesome.
That they're free to come to my office and be like, I don't know if I like this or whatever.
Right.
You know, if you have questions or like, cause really fear again is, will stop people from doing this.
Yeah.
It's scary to cut somebody's hair. It's
totally.
Scary the thought of having somebody that is maybe difficult to deal with,
mm-hmm,
in their chair.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if they fixate on things like that or get super nervous or whatever, it can overshadow the fact that they've really got a passion for it, and then they can get stalled in that fear.
Oh my gosh, so perfectly, brilliantly presented and said, thank you so much. And that
thank
is
you.
Really well, it's an opportunity for me to just talk about how we need to engage our students in more understanding of what the personal part of the work is, and not, you know, there's so much around the technical and the hours and just passing the boards here in California, and I feel like we're doing our students a disservice when we don't get them more in touch with, you know, what the anxiety might look like and what it's going to feel like having a new client in their chair, you know, every hour, every couple of hours, and the transference of that anxiety, you know, and owning your own fear and knowing, you know, that it's okay, but having an understanding of how it will affect you going forward.
Oh, for sure. I think that's, you know, part of, you know, why what you're doing is so important, and you know,
thank
to
you.
Check in with yourself and to make sure that you don't burn out. And if you have burned
mm-hmm.
yourself out,
mm-hmm.
how you can get yourself back and be in more of a balanced state. So I just adore you. And I think that is so important. I mean, that should be in all the curriculums at school, not just how to do a haircut.
Yeah.
Like I think it's super important.
Yeah. I mean, you've had so much experience with so many different types of people, especially with this program that you guys have out there. When you have had someone, you know, come up to you and come to the office and say, I don't know if I can do this, is it typically around, you know, the anxiety or is
yes.
it more? Okay.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
typically the anxiety, because anybody can learn how to do a haircut.
Right. Right.
Anyone can learn how to do color.
Right. I agree.
And normally it's the anxiety and fear. It's the anxiety of that, like you said, transference of energy. And I don't know how to talk to women that are 30 years older than me.
Right.
Or I don't know how to do a men's haircut. You know, having a man in my chair, that makes me uncomfortable. So it's not
mm-hmm.
even,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's all of that personal,
it's the personal
stuff. And their kids, Yeah. You know, they come out and they're just kids.
Totally.
So they don't have all that, you know,
life experience.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Jinx, you want me a Coke? Yeah, they just don't have all of that. So, and somebody's going to tell them it's okay. You know,
yeah.
I'm like, you know, try to read a newspaper, try to at least, you know, thumb through, you know, so you can talk about current latest events. Movies or right. Yeah, current events or, you know, whatever, have a few things so that you're not, you know, talking about your dog for an hour and a half or your parents or whatever, right. You know, right. Talk about them, give them opportunities to talk about themselves. Because yeah. Sometimes this is the only time that our clients get that opportunity
to
unload their stuff. But I also teach them or try to teach them how to, you know, let that go in one ear and out the other, and that they're not mm-hmm. carrying that stuff around. Because mm-hmm. I used to do that back in the day.
For sure.
Somebody would tell me a story, India, and I would be like, oh my gosh, I would be so, like, I think Nina calls that codependent.
Right.
You know, I'd be so plugged in, you know, that's very West Coast.
Right.
I'd be so plugged in, and then they'd come back. I'd be like, oh my gosh, how are you doing? How'd you ever make out with that? Whatever. They'd be like, what?
What? What are you talking about?
I'm like, yeah, I'm like, oh, last time you were here. They're like, oh no, that's all fine. And I'd be like, well, shit, I've been thinking about that for 6 weeks. I mean, not constantly, not like, totally. You know, in a super stalkery or unhealthy way. I'd just be like, oh, I mean, I guess it was unhealthy because I was thinking about people that are basically strangers.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just wanted to know they were okay. But it's totally. Just, yeah, super weird. And then I was like, okay, I have to stop doing that because it's really draining. Like,
yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. And when you think about how you handle your personal clientele, this, you know, this, I'm sure as an owner, you're the butterflying around the room and touching, you know, every head that comes in there just because they know you and you know them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're with your people that you still work on behind the chair with, you know, how have you over the years noticed that you've evolved into different ways of handling them, listening to them, you know, and sharing space with them?
Well, I feel like, I mean, a lot of my clients I've had for a really long time. So, I mean, I laugh with these people. Mm-hmm. I, you know, I cry with them. I hurt yeah. with them.
Yeah.
Because so much stuff happens and it's, you know, back and forth. So same, you know, they've been there for me too. Sometimes when mm-hmm. I've had some rough goes but I just never really, I don't feel heavy anymore when people leave. Sometimes I would feel super heavy and it would like weigh on me. And I feel like almost like my heart would literally ache.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that it doesn't sometimes when they suffer a devastating loss or totally. Something, yeah. you know, something really huge happens. But otherwise mm-hmm. I just keep a healthy boundary. I mean, I listen and I'm all in, I'm plugged in. I am completely with that person. When I'm with that person, we take one client at a time. So I don't double book.
Yeah, me too.
So I am just completely, I do my best to be present. Cause of course, like you said, as a salon owner, sometimes things are happening in the background and somebody needs me for something, but it is very rare that I get interrupted when I'm with a client.
Nice.
It's gonna be really important for someone to interrupt me because they know how important that time is when I'm with somebody. So I feel like I give it my all then, and then I kind of, you know, you unplug when they walk away, you unplug.
And what is, I mean, I just, you know, for people listening, they go, oh gosh, I wish I could do that. You know, what do you think has contributed to you being able to do that? Like if you go back and look at your progression, did you have a bottom, like a burnout that kind of had you look at things differently?
Yeah, I think I did. I think, you know, just in my life I was having, you know, I was just super burnt, had just had a relationship end, and I was just super like fragile and on edge. Mm-hmm. And so I went to therapy and,
nice.
She gave me a visualization that I use now to this day. That was like, you know, over,
fantastic.
Oh my God, that was maybe, I don't know, maybe 30 years ago.
Wow.
Jeez, God, I forgot how old I am. so, but she gave me the visualization of, she said, imagine a giant, plug in the wall, electrical outlet in the wall, and you being plugged into them is, you know, that sucking all of that energy out of you, and you have the choice just to unplug.
Wow.
So when I would feel like I was getting super anxious around somebody, or like, and even I had frenetic energy forever and super negative, and, you know, didn't think I was negative and for years. And it's been a slow progression. It's taken me a long time to get here, but, you know, I feel like I started meditating. I stopped drinking alcohol. I stopped drinking caffeine. Cause I think I was so burnt just from all of it. I mean, it started, of course, 30 years ago, but with age, you know, I got to kind of look at myself and think, I don't like the way I'm moving around in the world. I'm so just on edge all the time. I was easy to anger, drinking more than I wanted to. And I thought, I don't want to do that. I don't want to run home and be like, oh, I need a glass of wine. Oh, I need a whatever.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I can't wait for the weekend. I was like, that's not what I want my life to be. Like, I love work. Like, I love work, and I don't want to feel, thankfully, you know, the alcohol gave me such anxiety that I thought I've got to rid my life of all the anxiety.
Wow.
And alcohol causes massive anxiety for me. And I just, I'm not going to do this anymore. So, the last night that I drank too much. Like I woke up hungover and I thought, what the hell am I doing? I don't want to do this anymore. And then I stopped drinking. I haven't touched alcohol again. And I think I'm going on 4 years.
Powerful stuff. Yeah. It's amazing.
And the, you know, and the caffeine too, like anything that causes me anxiety, I just I either don't spend a lot of time around people that cause me anxiety because I can only kind of shield myself or bubble myself so much, but like super negative people or super angry people or super whatever people, for the way I behave. So I just find myself that I'm just not really hanging around with a lot of people that just have that super frenetic energy. It's just not fun. And I want to just have as much fun as I possibly can and just be around super positive people, because then that motivates me to constantly try and be better myself.
Well, and to say, you know, just side note, like positive people are looking at life through a different lens. It doesn't mean that they're always okay, or that they're always on high, or that they're always, you know, positive. It's just, there's a different lens of perspective that people look through when they have a certain energy and a positivity about them. And I think,
agreed. Good
you know,
point.
That's, you know, so it's like, we get locked into this, like, I just want to be this kind of person, or I want to be this way all the time. And it's like, that's not, you know, it's not a
realistic.
Exactly. But, you know, to just reframe it a little bit and to know that, you know, when you get clear, like you have gotten with first your physical energy, and now all of the things that you were doing, the visualization, the meditation, and the, you know, exiting certain types of relationships that can be, you know, taxing. It's like you're now really feeling the benefit of everything that you do collectively. And I think that's the, you know, people get kind of caught up in like, what do I need to do to feel better, to, and it's like, well, it's a collection of things that you have to contribute to your life. And I think that what, you know, you're painting this picture of everything that you've done, and that now has collectively created your life as you wish it to be, which is just awe-inspiring. And it's, to me, it's like, wow, you can feel it coming off of you. You know, you can feel it just hearing you talk about your life.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
It was a long road.
Right.
And it was, you know, I cringe sometimes, of course, when I think about my past or past behavior and whatever, but I know there's nothing I can do about that. And, you know, I can only just try to be better in the next moment, the next day, today, right here, right now, and not act like that. And I'm super glad that you said, yeah, you're not positive all the time. But, you know, when I get low, or I get, it's not as low. When I get mad, I'm not as mad.
Totally.
Because it is a totally different lens. Like, if somebody does something to hurt me or make me mad, I'm like, I know where that's coming from for them. Mm-hmm. So I have more empathy and sympathy if somebody's mean to me, or they're angry, or they're, or whatever. I know that it's less about me and more about them. And then it just gives me a different lens to look at them through and just be more sympathetic and empathetic.
Yeah, it gives us permission to not need to fix it either, you know, to judge it. It's a really powerful, for me, it's a really powerful feeling, because I am codependent, is to not.
I think like we I all have, are.
I read that book. As well. Yeah.
Nina had me read, our friend Nina Kovner was like, yeah, you need to read that Codependent No More. I read it. I'm like, damn it, everybody's codependent.
And I think that too, you know, to give people an understanding too, I had someone say to me, you know, I was diagnosed with a learning disability, and she told me what this learning disability was. And I said, it doesn't sound like a learning disability to me. It sounds like you're highly sensitive. And so many of the people in our industry are highly sensitive, empathic people. And if you are, then you're always going to be feeling other people's stuff.
Yes.
And if you're feeling other people's stuff, then there's this idea, if I can change the way that they feel, control what they're doing and how they're doing it, then I won't have to feel what they're feeling.
Yes.
So yeah, fuck yeah, we're all fucking codependent. Excuse my language, but you know,
oh my God,
geez.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. And once you just release trying to control anything about anybody else, the freedom is, oh my gosh, yeah. It's awesome. It's like, you worry about you, you know, somebody had said once, you know, think about how hard it is. And I don't know who this person is. They said, think about how hard it is to make personal changes with yourself.
Ugh,
we're also
right?
busy figuring out what other people need to change about themselves. And if you only did this, and if you just did that, it's like, you focus on you and what you need to change, because that's hard enough. And if it was that easy for other people to change, then you'd change your own shit. So worry about you. So when I find myself doing that, I just go, no, you got a long list of your own stuff that you could be working on. So don't you focus on anybody else at all. And it does. It makes me so much happier. Like, it's just better. It's just better.
It is so much easier. and that's one of the things that I know that we are people, persons, you know, we're like Robert Cromian says, we're servants of the heart. I love that he says that, you know, that it's the way we touch people's lives. And he always told me from when I first started, you can really teach anyone to be a hairdresser, but you can't teach certain types of personalities to be that people person.
Yes.
You know, it really does have
Agreed.
To come naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so difficult to have to be so personal, be so connected, intertwined with people's lives, and not want to have the power to change it, to not
yes.
desire for them what they are seeking.
Yeah. Yes. Agreed.
And then, you know, here we are holding their vanity in our hands and helping them to transform into what they think they want themselves to look like.
Yes.
It's like the more I teach people, mentor hairdressers, into the deeper understanding of their work, the more I'm fascinated by it. And it really is such an incredible role that we are fulfilling in the lives of our community.
It's huge.
You know?
Huge.
Damn. And then now we've got this whole mental health crisis, you know, and so we're seeing people in a way that reveals them enough to where we can kind of go, oh, wow, you know, there's some bigger stuff going on here.
Yep.
So when conversations, when you're training your newcomers, you know, what kind of background do you give them with? Do you have programs set in place to help them handle sensitive situations, whether it's a cancer diagnosis or, you know, domestic violence, addiction, depression? I mean, how do we help our young ones, you know, when they're coming into this to navigate all of that?
That's a great question. I have to be 100% honest. I don't, and I should. I think maybe those are things I need to write down and look at and think, how do I handle that?
Yeah.
So how do I help them handle it?
Yeah.
Because I certainly, you know, we've gone through it, you know, as a salon. I mean, thankfully, yeah. You know, I've got my veterans and we know when we've got someone coming in and we've got to shave their hair or yeah. something, you know, we've got a private place for them. We've
oh, that's got, you so know, lovely.
We make it a longer appointment so that, you know, we can sit mm-hmm. and talk and hold hands and cry. And mm-hmm. So that's a great point. So I actually shame on me. So it would behoove me to implement something like that for them to make it easier. Do you do that? Is that part of some of the training that you do?
No shame ever. It's just a realization for you to think of things in a different way. As far as it's my background that gives yeah. me these indicators. You know, I know the indicators. I can see certain things coming and have either a conversation or just a shared experience that helps that person. You know, believe it or not, you know, I've had a lot of alcoholics reveal themselves to me in my chair.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like attracts like, and thankfully I don't drink with my clients anymore, but I actually talk recovery with my clients and they feel safe because I've shared my experience with them so much that they're capable of feeling vulnerable without feeling judged.
Right, which is awesome.
Which is amazing, you know, because I know for myself how hard I was on myself around my own drinking that I didn't need anybody else pointing fingers and making, you know,
comments
for me. Comments, yeah, exactly.
Right. Or judgments or anything.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it's very personal to make a decision around addiction and whether or not you are an addict or an alcoholic. And, you know, obviously if you see someone in crises, then that's a different story. But, you know, it's not my job to call that person an alcoholic, but, you know, knowing that someone is intoxicated in your chair at 9 a.m. in the morning and offering them a glass of wine might not be the best protocol.
Yeah, I think right? that's, yeah.
You know, right. And it's, like, yeah. so it's this salon environment has become you know, obviously there's a more wellness focus going on in a lot of salon situations.
Yes,
thank these God. Days. Thank God. Yeah. But there's still a lot of salons that are having that kind of party mentality where the, you know, you get champagne or wine when you come in and it's a whole day long, you know, ritual of beauty.
Yeah.
And that part of that ritual is drinking.
Yep.
But if I have someone showing up who already smells like alcohol, I'm not going to offer them a drink. And it's you know, it's understanding like what we are intended to be and what we're providing for our clients and what kind of space we want to share with them.
Yeah.
And everybody's different, you know, so you being who you are and how you are educating your newcomers, it's more about, you know, the experience and how you're supporting your community. So it would be more along the lines of you setting up a protocol that how do you deal with this? What's the language around it? You know, what do you do next and how, what kind of support do you give them and when do you back off?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we definitely need to put something in place because all of these things have happened. I mean, we don't offer alcohol in the salon. You know, mainly here in Massachusetts, you're not supposed to anyway, it's illegal.
Okay.
But people do it anyway. I've been right. in plenty of salons where I've been drinking with, you know, they've been drinking like it was, you know, yeah. I mean, I wasn't drinking during the day. It would be last client at night, whatever, after mm-hmm, the blow dry, mm-hmm. whatever. And we're hanging out and having cocktails or whatever. But it was, yeah, very much that mentality
yeah.
of, you know, offering alcohol. And then when, you know, if somebody asked for too much, then we're like, oh, shit, what do we do
what
now?
What do we do now?
And no systems in place. And I just knew when I opened, I was like, I don't want any alcohol here. And that was, I still drank at that point.
Oh, interesting.
And I just knew that that wasn't you know, well, speaking to my insurance guy or whatever too, we was like, well, that, you know, it's just not a good idea. It's not a smart idea. And you put yourself at risk doing it. So I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to do that. So it's just, yeah, it can be dicey sometimes. And yeah, and calling someone out in your chair or whatever is definitely not a good idea. But, but yeah, I mean, shoot, I've definitely had people, because again, like when I'm going through something, I'm completely transparent and, you know, told my clients, you know, I don't drink anymore. I decided, you know, that just wasn't good for me. It wasn't making me feel good about myself. It was making me feel anxious and ashamed. And I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you need to run home and drink wine after work. Like what is that?
So actually I would love it if you could maybe articulate, like, how did you change that? You know, did you just have kind of an inspired moment when you woke up that day and you're like, I'm just not going to do this anymore. And then when you would go home after a long day, you weren't drawn to do your usual, like how did you change your routine?
It definitely was a routine. You know, I'd pour a glass of wine when I was cooking and then another one when I was eating and then another one after I was done eating. You know, not that it was always in excess, but it was getting there. And
it was constant.
Yeah. And plenty of times I overdrank. So I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I hadn't ever done that or wasn't doing that. But it wasn't always that. So what I did was I just changed what I put in the glass.
Interesting. Okay.
I kept the glass, and now I was filling it with seltzer water, filling it with regular water. I was just like, you're going to drink as much water as you used to drink alcohol. And so I just didn't feel like, I just didn't feel like it anymore. I just knew I was done. Like a month after I decided to quit drinking, we went to Disney for the wine and food festival.
Oh, how funny.
And I was like, well, I'm just not going to drink the booze. I'm going to eat the food, but I'm not like, I don't want to feel shitty anymore. I just don't want to feel, I don't want the anxiety. And so I made sure that I always had something. I had a bottle of water. I had a bottle of seltzer. I always had something.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like, oh, whatever. I'll just have one. I'll just whatever. I was like, no, because you have one, and you know, it might be one. It might be 10. I just don't want to be wrapped up in that anymore. And I don't want to be disrespectful of anybody following a program, because I think those are very important. That was just not, that's just not the way that I went about it. I was fortunate enough. I just made the decision that I'm not going to drink anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. And I stopped.
And that's so, not the case for a lot of people, but in the case where it is something that people can make a informed decision about, I'm glad that you're sharing your experience, because there are so many people out there who are not addicts and alcoholics, who are abusing, you know, and it's what I talk about, the maladaptive coping measures, so much, because we get stuck in a routine and we don't realize how it's not serving us anymore. And to give someone an opportunity to just say, what if I took this out of my routine? What would change? And just to have the curiosity and then take the action, you know, sharing your experience helps people. You give them permission to do the same thing.
Well, I'm glad.
Thank you. Yeah.
Of course. I just didn't, like I said, I just want to be disrespectful of anybody who's working a program and that works for them. And I think that, however, you need to, move around in the world to make yourself feel better and do better, I think is super important.
Yeah.
And but I also didn't feel like, oh, I don't want to go to things now. So right. I didn't have that. I didn't feel like, oh, what will I do if I go wherever? You know, to whatever party. Like, I just don't stay as late as I used to now, because I'm like, it's not as, it's not as fun for as long as it used to be. It's just everything, but I just feel better now. I feel better mentally. I feel better physically, I just feel better. And I, you know, but I definitely like, what did you call that? Maladaptive
coping measures.
Okay. Yeah. Like I was numbing myself out instead of looking at, you know, what I might be unhappy with or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I was unhappy, you know, I was unhappy with a lot of things. So I just, there was, I just needed to change and just decided that I was done and tired. And, you know, I need to take responsibility for myself. Like if I'm not happy, it's not anybody else's fault, but my own.
Mm-hmm.
And then I need to look at it, address it. What can I do to change it?
Yeah.
Cause complaining about it's never fixed anything so far. So I tried that method. Damn it. But yeah,
I was really
work.
Good at eliciting pity from people so that I could keep drinking the way I wanted to drink.
Oh.
It's really interesting, you know, when we get to the storytelling part of our lives and how we've given ourselves permission over and over again to just keep, you know, sticking in that story and complaining mm-hmm. about what's not changing when we're the ones who have the power to change it.
Exactly.
So when you think about, you know, how you have evolved as a result of the actions that you've taken to, you know, change the way you do things, the way you look at things, and the way you interact with your life, do you see how your life has evolved without you really having to do anything different? I mean, as far as like, you're just doing you, and then you watch life expand around you.
Yeah. It's just, it's not as hard.
Like, exactly.
It's just, I'm just happier.
Exactly.
And I think when you're happier, you make better choices. You mm-hmm. just, everything flows so much better. I mean, I don't mean I'm happy every second.
Right.
No one's happy every second. We had already talked about that. But in general, I wake up happier every day. I just, I'm not as frenetic. I'm not as angry. I just don't have any of that anymore.
Well, it's always gone. So interesting to me how, for myself, I've noticed that I felt so much blame, and I definitely was sitting in the victim seat, you know, a lot when I was drinking. And it was, you know, that whole thing, if they would just ABC fill in the blank, then I would be okay.
Yeah.
And when I got sober and I started doing the work that I needed to do, you know, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and physically, it was interesting to me how life revealed itself differently without anyone having to change. But what was changing inside of me gave me a different perspective.
Yeah.
I was having a different reaction to the same experiences, to the same people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So that is, you know, it's really, it's hard to want something for someone and have no way to articulate what they're going to experience. And I want so badly for people to know that they can let go of these maladaptive coping measures and not feel like they've just been dropped off the side of a cliff and have nothing to hold on to.
Yeah, I think it's with anything, right? Like when people come out of the other side of something else,
mm-hmm.
like when people are like, I don't smoke anymore and I feel so much better. I wish I had done it sooner, or I quit drinking, or I quit overeating and I started working out and I feel so much better. Like, you know, I do believe people have to be ready. Like you have to be ready to make a change, and then you do it. Like, you know, cause you can just trade one addiction for another one.
Yep. I'm raising my hand.
Okay. All right. So it's just, I feel like people aren't moved to make change until it's presented to them that it's their time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you might try a whole bunch of times
to
change something.
Said.
Like you're not going to change, you know, you try something once, it doesn't mean it'll stick. Like,
and I think it doesn't mean
more forgiving.
Right.
Yeah. Just have to be more forgiving of ourselves. Like, look, you're not going to get it right all the time. Who's going to get, I mean, I tell hairdressers, stylists, in every class, I'm like, your 100th haircut is a hell of a lot better than your first.
Yeah.
So, you know, the more you do something, volume cures everything.
Mm.
So the more times you're successful at whatever you're trying to achieve, you know, you just keep getting better and better and better at things, but nobody's good at it at first. like a change feels awkward. Change feels, we're in an industry of change.
Yeah.
And so many of us don't want to change a damn thing we're doing.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to keep people the same. I want to section them the same. I want to do everything I do the same. It's like, well, shit, then what are you doing? Like, like, that's not what people are looking for.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, change something, change one thing. If something's making you unhappy, whatever it is, just change it. And I know that sounds different. Simple, but just, yeah, know, just find another way.
It is simple.
And it can be hard depending on what it is, whatever mm-hmm. cross it is you're bearing. You know, you just have to try to come at it a different way. Just for yourself. Be nice to yourself.
Yeah.
Be as nice to yourself as you are to other people.
And authentically, you know, not with a sugar-coated smile that's just, you know, trying to hide everything that's inside. It's really knowing that you loving yourself is the first and most important thing. You know, we can't have, I'm always telling people, you know, you're cultivating self-compassion, love of self. It naturally allows you to have those feelings for others, and it naturally creates better boundaries. But it's got to start with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, you know, that kind of leads me into asking, like, how is it that you're helping with your young people that are coming in that have the whole, like, comparisonitis and just don't, you know, they want to be that person on Instagram immediately, and they don't see all of the work that it's taken to get there.
Again, it's just being super transparent. And, you know, we get them coming to our education mm-hmm. and really, and my goal is to teach them everything generically and universally, like the board and like we do at Coastline.
Mm-hmm.
So then that way they understand, it's like, okay, take that person out of like, okay, what does that following do for them? What is that doing? What are they doing with that following? Are they teaching classes? Because I know I've been to a whole bunch of classes with people with tons of followers. And the only reason I didn't ask for my money back was because I was like, the education I just got from you is the fact that you have a lot of followers doesn't mean shit. And then I've been to some that have been really good too. But, I burnt a whole lot of money out there. So,
light it on fire right at the door.
Might as well. I should have, but again, I got the lesson. I got the lesson out of it. And then that keeps me motivated to keep educating my new ones that come in, working with our team,
mm-hmm.
So that we do better education, because, you know, everybody's like so jacked up about this independent thing, but all these independent people are now looking for sponsors.
Right.
So it's like, that's coming full circle too, because that's real hard to be truly independent and truly generic and truly universal. It's super, super hard.
Yeah.
And you better have a strong stomach for it, because that's a long road. And so I teach them that. I'm like, you know, we talk about all of that. And I'm like, and if you're on your phone and you're starting to feel anxiety about, well, look, they're doing it better there. I'm like, put your phone down.
Yeah,
because someone's always going to do it better. They're going to do it faster. They're going to do whatever. But the hours that it takes to even learn how to take a picture right.
Right.
So we talk about that. I'm like, all right, you take some pictures of that, and then let me show you how to take some pictures of that. So just a few, and I'm not even super great at it. I've spent a lot of hours taking classes to try mm-hmm. to get better at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, look, all it is, you know, putting a few pins to make it look a little beefier somewhere or whatever. And,
right.
And, you know, having a really good background, so it's all these little, and once they start looking at it and really like picking it apart and understanding, like, okay, I'm good enough. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing is good enough. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I need you to be the best version of you. I don't need you to try to be me. I don't need you to try to be anybody else in the salon. I think you should focus on the fact that we're all successful and happy doing what we're doing, and then figure out what it looks like to you. What's going to make you the happiest?
Yeah.
How can we get you there, and not focus on anything anyone else has, and just what it looks like to you right now. And what it looks like to you right now doesn't mean that that's what it's going to look like in a year or 5 years or 10 years.
Exactly.
I mean, 'cause now to sit down and go, what's your 5-year plan? Like, well, what the hell, how the hell do I know what my 5-year plan? I don't know what's going to happen to me in the next 5 minutes.
Right.
So I think that's an unrealistic expectation. And just, you know, just to try to guide them to not put themselves up against anybody else online. Nobody's posting their ugly pictures online or exactly. their, I just had a huge fight with my husband last night pictures. Like, you know, I'm ready to slap my kids' pictures. Nobody's posting those on Instagram. I mean, yeah, people share like, you know, true-ish stories every once in a while or their truth every once in a while. But, you know, as a general rule, that's not what's going on out there.
Yeah, so, completely.
And then, you know, they meet these Insta-famous people or whatever. They're just regular people. They're just normal people like everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the ones that have gotten big followers or whatever, they worked really hard at it. I mean, some of them bought the following. But, you know, most of the people, I mean, the people that I'm friendly with and the people that I hang around with grinded. They worked yeah. super hard. So yeah. I also share that with them to not have unrealistic expectations. You're going to get out of this industry as much as you put into it, period.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of hard work.
It is a lot of hard work. And it's very important, you know, to know that they can enjoy it, you know, and have support along the way. How do you encourage them to ask for help? You know, when do they just kind of learn that as a result of how you interact with them and who you are as a person?
I think maybe, but I also say, you know, ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also trying to figure out that line of, do they need me to step in? Do they need mm-hmm. me to, you know, we've got our manager, Gloria, who is amazing. So her eyes are on everything. If my eyes aren't on something, hers are.
Mm.
So sometimes it's just enough. I look over at the desk and she'll look at me and look at whoever she thinks needs help. will break me from, okay, I'm like, you know what? I just need a second and I'll walk away and I'll just check in. Is everything okay? But we also do like weeklies with everybody that I, you know, I'll tell them what I think maybe they need a little work on and definitely, you know, work on praising mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. giving kudos where they're earned.
Great.
Because they're just, it's just such a, the whole staff, they're just so great, all of them, and have such just gifts that they bring to work every day. And I'm just, I love them. I love these people.
Yeah.
And they want to help. So they'll, you know, if a team member sees somebody else struggling, like they'll be talking about it in the back. There's no fear in asking anybody anything because there's no, oh, you're a moron, you're a whatever.
Right.
It's like, oh, let me help.
It's
everybody
all positive.
Has. Yeah, they've just all got the spirit of what can I do for you?
Mm-hmm.
I guess, I mean, it's just naturally shooken out that way. And
yeah,
I mean, again, part of the culture that I've cultivated that I don't want negative people and gossipy people and
right.
judgmental people. And just the group that we have is so, they're so dedicated to the clientele and to each other
right.
to just to do better and to be better and to help. So I think it's just naturally you can feel it in that environment that
mm-hmm.
everybody wants you to win. Because
mm-hmm.
if you win, I win. And if I win, you win.
Right.
So there's no benefiting by making sure somebody stays down. Not with us anyway.
Yeah. And I think that just says so much about you and what you've created. It's beautiful. And just for the salon owners out there who, you know, are struggling with the idea of creating, you know, cultivating a salon culture and have had, you know, situations where people have left and the heartbreak of losing people and not knowing what you could have done differently. You know, how have you rolled with turnover and people who've left? I mean, I know you have an incredible, you know, perspective, but maybe just like at that moment, if you can share what it felt like and how you dealt with it.
Well, it never feels great. Again, as we have progressed and gotten, you know, our people, you know, now when they leave, it hurts, but it's not, I'm so happy for them for whatever their next is.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had, I mean, recently in the past 4 months, I've had two leave. One was, it was her situation was she's going to have her second child. Her best friend just opened a shop and was going to let her rent a booth there. And it was going to be a better situation for her and her family, closer to home, just all
around
bells and whistles for her.
Yeah.
And I mean, how could I be mad at that? Like, I just want her to win. I still do. Like, I love her, and she poured so much into us and was so great for so long that it's not my place to be mad at her or feel like, but again, like, she didn't leave and try to take four people with her. So that's a different, that's a different vibe altogether.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I have another one who started as a co-op student. My Amy, she just graduated from college. Wow. And she wants to go and pursue her degree. Mm. So, you know, with both of those people, like, tears were shed. I'm so sad and so happy at the same time.
Right.
Both of them know, which I told them, I said, if you change your mind, there is no phone call necessary. You show up with a bag with your stuff and I find you a station.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it.
Cause they're just great. And it doesn't benefit me to try to hold anybody back. So right. when a kid comes to me, like when Amy came, she thought she wanted to open a salon. So I said, I will help get you there. I said, the nature of this business is normally you come, and then once you're close, you start gathering your client information, and it's real shady and sketchy and gross. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And especially if you're building someplace, it's going to take a while for it to open. So you stay here if you want to until you go, because, you know, construction, they tell you June, it's probably going to be August.
Right.
So let's not have that awkward. You know, as long as you treat me with respect, I treat you with respect. I want to get you to where you can go or wherever it is you want to be. So when they come in, they come in into that spirit.
Right.
We start that with the very first interview.
That's great.
Like, what do you want? What are you looking to get out of this? Because if I don't know, I don't know if I can help you.
Totally.
And this is my expectation of you. So then we check in. I keep checking in. But, you know, we've had a few that left over the years. I was, you know, happy they were gone. And I'm sure they were happy to go.
Right.
You know, so we've had a few of those. But, I mean, again, I said earlier, we've lost people over the years that I love. Like, they're great people. Like, whatever. They had a loyalty to somebody else. Or they wanted to go work for somebody else. I mean, and I used to freak out. It would make me so nervous, especially being a new owner. I was like, oh, my God. I don't know if we're going to implode. I don't know what's going to happen financially. I was scared to death.
Right.
But it's all right. Like, it's just like, now I don't freak out when somebody tells me something. I'm like, okay, we'll figure it out. We'll work it out, because me freaking out and staying up all night and feeling like I'm going to throw up isn't helping anybody or anything. But that's how I used to react, just like everybody else.
Right. Right.
So, you know, it's, you know, try not to take it personally. I know it's hard, especially if they're mad at you and they left and they have enough guts to tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody tells you something, I mean, I try to look at, okay, what was my part in it? What could I have done better?
Good.
I mean, I've made tons of mistakes. So, again, the people that I've lost recently, I feel bad and great about it. I want them to win.
No,
I want
them amazing.
To succeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then it just makes room for the new people to come in.
Yeah.
So.
And I think that's the biggest piece, is just to know that, you know, it's making space for something new and helping people to have confidence in the powers that be that have always provided and cared for them, you know. And that's a harder piece for people to acknowledge when they're in fear, but definitely, you know, sharing your experience will, I hope, make an impact on one of the listeners out there who's in the same position.
I hope so. And if you need a little help, reach out. I'll do the best I can to just walk you through it.
Oh my gosh. And I love how open and available you are. It's a very important quality when you're an influencer, as you are.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. And so what's on the schedule for you next? Are you going to be educating anywhere in the United States? Are you going to be home ground for a little bit?
Excuse me. I'm getting over a cold. Yeah, so usually for us, summer is pretty quiet,
Okay.
which is nice because nobody wants to take classes when it's nice out and we book things and then people don't show up, so that's no good.
Gotcha.
So the coastline schedule is pretty clear-ish right now, and then come September it'll ramp up again.
Okay.
I'm going out to teach at a one day event, and I wish I had more information about this, but fellow ABCHer Tonja LaCurry in Arkansas
Oh,
is
cool.
she's having a class, and she's basically what she's done is created her own academy there because she
Okay.
said I had trouble getting continuing ed, so she said, well, then I'll just make my own.
Nice.
And oh my gosh, I mean, so what's not to love about that? So
Yeah.
I was invited to go for that one day. That's August 4th. So I will do that. And then we start up with the coastline stuff again. I'll be in Ohio because we've got distributors in Ohio,
Okay.
Illinois, Jersey, Florida, California, Texas.
Wow.
So we're doing education, our whole team, all over the country. So I get to go down to,
Fantastic.
I'll be in Texas. I will be, sometimes it's trains, planes, automobiles. I'm never sure exactly where I'm going to be. But I know Ohio, I know Texas. And what I'm trying to also do is, oh, we're having a texture versus race
Cool.
is doing a tour. So I think we're going to do that up in the office. That will be end of July. Oh, end of this month because
Wow.
this month just
Yeah, just
started.
started.
So Kia kicked that off in Vegas. So
Nice.
she'll be in the office. Yes, end of July. And I think, oh, then we have a Balayage summit coming up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't the dates for that, forgive me. Also, I don't have my planner with me,
Okay.
but that's coming up. So that's from the Board of Certified Hair Colorists and the House of Collaboration, our friend Amber O'Hara. So excited to do and be involved in that. I get
No
to MC
joke.
that gig again, so I'm
Yay.
fired up about that.
No joke. And where can people find out all this information? Is it would they follow your link from Instagram? Is there a
Yeah,
website?
you can follow me. It's at Brendola, BrendolaH. At Brendola on Instagram will pretty much get you to all the other stuff. If you're interested in our 4-day, it's called Color Freaks and Geeks class.
Oh my gosh, I
You
love
can
it.
go, right? You can go to coastlineedu.com, and that they can give you the schedule for the entire country and what's happening in the fall. I'm not sure if we've released the actual calendar yet,
Okay.
but they can help direct you there. And then yeah, the other stuff I'll just post, like when I'm doing it, I'll post and try to give enough lead time to give people an opportunity to get a ticket and show up
Wherever you are.
wherever we're doing the thing. So yeah.
That's so exciting. I love hearing all about it. And I
Oh, I'm also
know
trying to get to Jamaica too. I'm so
Oh,
sorry.
what?
Trying to get to Jamaica with Kia Neal and her
Oh,
color culture team.
how fun.
She does. It's called Culture Camp. So she's got her,
Wow.
that's the weekend after Thanksgiving. So which is Thanksgiving is late this year. So that weekend sucks in the salon anyway because people forget appointments or whatever. So that's
No
typically
joke.
usually dead for us. So we take that off. So I'm going to do the best I can to go join her and her team down in Jamaica. I knew I
Oh
had something
my
big
gosh.
that I was trying to make happen.
That
So,
is so exciting.
yeah.
Ah, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
Beautiful,
So.
beautiful, beautiful. Well, as always, I love talking to you, hearing you, sharing time and space with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast today. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for asking. And you know that I just any time that I can talk to you or spend with you, I just always feel a little centered, more centered, better, and calmer. And I just adore you and everything that you're doing for our industry. And I'm super grateful. to you. Just love you so much.
I love you too, sweetheart. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your Thursday, and I will look forward to catching up with you on the flip side.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Creative, compassionate, passionate artists, thank you so much for joining me for this conversation with Brenda. If you have any questions about what we discussed or about the classes that she has coming up, you can find her on Instagram, like she said, at Brendolah, BrendoLah, and at CoastlineEDU, and also CoastlineEDU.com. And as always, if you have any questions about burnout and the beauty expert, please don't hesitate to reach out at IndiaDunn_and_co on Instagram, or you can email me india@indiadunn.com. Have a great rest of your day.